everything that you learn is for a purpose. I changed what I heard, and then I changed the self-talk that was in my head, because it took a little while for me to decide, like, if I really want to move forward as a person. That takes some honesty. Like, sometimes you're just not honest with yourself. So I had to figure out who I was to figure out how I was going to navigate the rest of my life.
This is Alicia, and welcome to the College Life Podcast. The College Life Podcast is here to provide you with ideas on how college students can design their life, be mindful and intentional about what they're doing while they're in college. We will also interview people who have already graduated from college, who currently work at a college, and current college students. Each guest will share their story, their struggles, their successes, and offer you tips on how to take ownership and make the most of your time while you're in college. Let's get to it. Welcome to the College Life Podcast. Today I have with me a good friend, Margaret, and she is going to tell a little bit about her story. So Margaret, before we get started, why don't you just tell me a little bit about your path to college and what you're doing now?
So I'm originally from the inner city of Chicago, and I lived on the south side in Inglewood, and a lot of people in my neighborhood didn't go to college. And I heard about it while I was at church, ironically. I was talking to one of the youth pastors about their path and what they did and how they became a pastor. And they said, oh, I went to school at this particular school. And then they started talking about their experience. And I was like, maybe I should go to college. So then after that, my school sponsored 5 college fairs, and they were all around the city. And then the church had a college fair. And then the youth pastor thought it would be appropriate to not just have college fairs, but to go on a college tour. And so we took...
You went on a college tour with your church?
Yes.
What?
And we took, I think we went to 4 different states, and we were gone for quite some time. I think it was like spring break. And I thought about college, and I figured I wanted to go to college. I didn't know what that meant, per se. I was just like, I'm going to college, a faraway place, and my parents won't be able to come visit. So that's what happened.
Yeah. So how did you get to what you're doing now? What are you currently working on?
So currently I'm working on my doctorate in higher education and student affairs leadership. How did I get there? I went to college, and I thought I wanted to be a teacher. And because, like, my favorite teachers in high school were history, I was like, I'm going to be a history teacher, just like them.
I can't even see you doing that now, but that's so funny.
I was like, I want to be a history teacher, just like them. And I remember going through, like, 3 years of taking history courses and fighting with instructors and feeling like the history that I was being taught was not the history that I learned. And I just got really frustrated because we were required to do 125 observation hours. So the first 100 were observation, like what a class looks like, how to volunteer, all that good stuff. And then the last 25 was like, you're in charge of a class. So you start planning lesson plans and things like that. And I realized I didn't want to be a teacher. And I was 3 years in. I went to talk to my instructor, and she was like, I don't know if you really do want to be a teacher. I know that you want to like work with students, but I don't know if you really want to be a teacher. And so, we looked at my course schedule and what I had left, and she said, so either you could finish up your teaching classes and be here for 3 more semesters, because it was like right at the beginning of junior year. So she was
That's whenever I started feeling that too. Yeah. And I was in education too, and I just felt like trapped.
I was like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So she was like, you can do this in 3, or you can finish in exactly 4 years, and you can get a degree in history and leadership studies. And so I focused on leadership studies. And then when I graduated, I started working at Cabrini Greens. It was a housing project in Chicago, because I already knew I didn't want to be a teacher, but I still wanted to work with students. And so I worked at an after-school program. And we had the students that, for lack of a better term, weren't doing well in school. They were getting D's and F's. They had some discipline issues. It was pretty interesting. It was a hard job. But that's what I wanted to do at that point, because I knew I wasn't ready to go teach at a school or work at a college.
So this was immediately after you graduated?
Immediately after I graduated, I went to start working. Mm-hmm. I worked there for like 5 years, And then I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to go work at a college. I think I'm ready to go back and get a degree. But while I was working there, like I still pursued like another degree. I went to seminary at North Park University in Chicago, and I did like three semesters.
Yeah.
It was pretty long, but I did three semesters of courses, and I was about to start learning Hebrew and Greek. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. Like, I'm excited about what I'm learning. I'm excited about the Bible and teaching it. But I was like, I don't know if I really want to, like, learn Greek and Hebrew. So, I started applying for schools to work at, and then I got a job in Missouri. And the first semester, I was getting recruited for, like, master's programs, and I was like, I'm not ready. I don't want to do that. So I worked for another 2 years. And by the fifth semester that I was there, I felt like I was ready. So I took a counseling and cultural foundations. I was like, oh, I think I want to be a counselor now. So I finished that degree. And then I worked in student support services, which is a TRIO program, which is for students that are low income, first generation college students, and or have a physical, mental, or learning disability. So I did that for 3 years. And I was like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. I don't want to be a counselor. Because I figured it out. I was like, I could do this. And these skills were beneficial for me personally. And learning how to listen to people and talk to them differently. And I wasn't as angry or as defensive. I don't know. I feel like I had a change of heart in counseling. Like, it changed me personally. Then I started thinking and praying and kind of interviewing people at the college that I worked at. And I was like, hey, what do you see me doing? And they were like, oh, I see you being a doctor. And I was like, I'm not a medical doctor. And they were like, no, I see you being like a vice president or a president or doing something with strategic planning, and you need to go get your doctorate. And I was like, okay. And then I heard a speaker at this conference who is now the president of ACPA, actually the president of ASH. And I heard him at a conference in Missouri, and I was like, oh, snap, I need to go get my doctorate.
What about that made you?
He told his story. He told a story about where he came from and, like, how he didn't have a father. And it was, I don't even remember the details.
Yeah.
I just remember, like,
the feelings.
I remember the feelings. I remember, like, thinking, oh, my God, if he could do that. If he could be like a writer and a scholar, I could be like a writer or a scholar. I could do that. So I thought back to when I was a writer, which was when I was doing my bachelor's, and I was a horrible writer in my bachelor's degree. I failed writing. I failed it once, and then I had to take it again. And I remember the second time around, I still have all the papers from it, like all the rewrites, because my teacher said that I wrote too fast. And I could never, she's like, you're always missing a word somewhere. So literally, I just felt like a horrible writer because I remember failing. And then I remember retaking it and feeling like I did twice as much work. Like, you would think that if you fail a class, you would get better the second time.
Right.
I just felt like I was like, this is horrible. Writing shouldn't take this much. Even starting and thinking about a doctorate program, I was like, wait, I'm not a good writer. This is not a good look. Maybe I shouldn't do it. So I applied for two programs. I applied for an educational doctorate, and I applied for a PhD. And I remember it. I remember specifically thinking about the differences between the programs. The educational doctorate, I would be finishing earlier and quicker. I was like, I want to do that. That seems easier. And the PhD, I would be there forever. Pretty.
That's how you I don't saw. Have to be.
That's how I saw it. So anyway, I didn't get into the educational doctorate, and I like was really frustrated because I thought that's the easier program, and surely I should have gotten into that one. But I got into the PhD program, and I like had a heart-to-heart with myself. I decided to defer a year, so I got accepted probably in like April or something. I deferred a year, and then I came the next year. Because they gave me the option. They were like, you can come this year, you can wait a year. I was like, I think I'm going to wait. I'm not sure if I'm mentally ready to do this. And so my last year of work was like amazing. It was the first time I got to transition out of a job peacefully and be prepared for somebody else to take my spot. Like I called it, I replaced myself everywhere. So all the committees that I did, I asked other people to do them. Nice. All the clubs that I was an advisor for, it was like 11 people. It was crazy. So that just meant I was doing too much. But yeah, I just remember thinking about it a lot and really thinking about if I'm a good enough writer to be in a PhD program.
We're going to expand on that in a minute.
Yeah.
But I want to go way back in the beginning of your story. And you talked about going to college fairs and connecting with your youth pastor and having that connection. So you had never thought about college before this, or you were kind of questioning it maybe?
Nah.
No, not really.
Okay. So, okay, here's the deal. College for me in Chicago, like when I was in eighth grade, there was like these college magnet schools that you could go to. And so I actually got accepted into one that was focused on like performing arts because I sang very well. And so I really wanted to go to that one, but I couldn't. At that point in my life, I couldn't decide if I wanted to be a singer for the rest of my life.
Why would you even have to? But, right? We feel this pressure.
Like, I was like, I don't want to be a singer for the rest of my life. And if I go to that school, I'm going to sing. And I don't want to sing forever. I just want to, like, I want to develop my mind. Like, so I didn't go to this particular school and ended up going someplace else. And the focus was to learn Spanish. That's what it was. You had to learn a language, and I didn't want to learn French, learn Spanish. Mm-hmm. I had heard about college. I took some advanced placement courses like my last year. My parents didn't go to school. The people around me didn't go to school. I had a boyfriend. He went to school for a year and then he dropped out. So like it just seemed like a far apart notion. And we started going to these college fairs. It was like, you know, when you go to a college fair, or at least when I went to college fairs, they didn't have like the scanner thing. So you had to fill out all of these cards with your information. And so I would be filling out. It had to be like 40 or 50 colleges. And so then my mom had a crate, like an empty crate. And so we just collected mail from colleges. And so then I got a map of the United States and I like put pins on it. And I was like, okay, these are the colleges in these places. What colleges, what places can I eliminate? Like what states do I not want to live in? With the little knowledge that I knew about those states.
Yeah.
So it's like, California, isn't it? And I never thought about traveling home at that point, but I was just like, climate, can I live there? Or what's too far? Mm-hmm. So I think I ended with Illinois, New York, and Florida, something like that. So then all the other, so my mom had like a little post-it note or whatever, but it was like colleges from these states go here and then colleges from these states go there.
Oh, that's such a good idea to have post-it notes like, everywhere.
So then when she would get them, she would just look at the address and just put them in one or the other. I ended up applying to like 10 schools. I got into 9 of them. I didn't get into Dartmouth or something like that. I remember that. I remember that being like, oh, so I'm not going there. Not a big deal. I didn't even know what that was. I was just like, I'm going to apply anyway.
Yeah.
My counselors were very helpful and like, making sure that I had waivers, because at that point in my life, I know I couldn't pay for anything. I couldn't pay for application fees. I couldn't pay for college tours, like nothing. So every time I would ask, like, hey, I think I want to apply to this school, they would be like, okay, well, let me give you a waiver for this, and let me make sure you can pay for that. And so they would just, it seemed like all the barriers that most people would immediately think about, like, oh, I can't apply to that school. The application fee is too expensive. I would just go to my counselor and be like, hey, I thought about this school. I should go there, right? Or they have what I want to do. I want to do history. I'm going to do history anywhere. And so, yeah, they were just helpful. And then my youth pastor pretty much read all my essays. It's pretty weird. I remember the school that I ended up choosing was like crazy small. It was 550 people there. And it was 5,000 people in the town. And I remember the reason why I chose it. I chose it because of the green grass. It was like, it was pretty and everything was calm. And I didn't have to take a bus anywhere because in Chicago I had to take 2 buses and a train to get to school. And I remember thinking about that in comparison to the like 5 or 6 other schools that I was like in love with. And I kept thinking, I don't want to take a bus every day. I need a rest from commuting. Yeah, I remember green grass and I thought, that's it. That's the place.
So how did you go from not really even thinking about college to thinking, okay, maybe this is possible, especially with even financial. I know that that's a really big challenge for a lot of students to think, especially with like, okay, well, I can't afford this application, but how am I going to afford college? How did you start thinking, oh, this could happen for me?
I'm a little bit older, so I didn't have the end goal in mind. I was just doing step by step.
Yeah.
Like everything was a new process. So, okay, do I want to go to college? Yes. Where do I want to go to college? I don't know. I could go anywhere.
Let me just apply and then I'll just figure it out. Okay.
It just seemed like, and I even, thinking back to that moment, I didn't think about financial aid. I didn't think about scholarships until after I got accepted. Okay. So I think when I got accepted to those 8, 9 schools or whatever, then I was like, went back to my counselor. What do I do now? Oh, you apply for scholarships and you apply for this. So my mom, I remember it because it was like, she still did that up until my master's program when I finally didn't need her to send me her taxes. But yeah, every year for 6 years, I used my mom's taxes. She did not fill out a FAFSA. I filled out a FAFSA. I sat in financial aid and I filled it out with them and I asked questions. I was like, am I missing something? And if I'm missing something, can I call my mom? And I didn't have a cell phone. No, I didn't have a cell phone. I just literally sat in their office. And yeah. So I would make an appointment and it'd be like at 4 o'clock after my classes were over. And from 4 to 6, I'd be in financial aid. But even that, everything seemed to me as like, okay, well, this is the process. Don't think of it as like a hump. Like this is a necessary part of the process. And don't get excited about the end process, which is so interesting because now I get really caught up in the end. Because right. I know what the end will look like.
I also think it's part of our society now. We have to figure out where are you going to be in 5 years instead of enjoying and focusing on kind of the next step too. I think it's both, but.
Yeah, now I think as I've gotten older, I'm like, oh, I know what this is going to look like at the end. Do I really want to get there? But at that point, I didn't know what the end was. I knew I was going to go to college. I kind of had that like, I may be the first on my block to be successful. And that's it. I don't know what the success is going to look like. I don't know what that's going to mean. I don't know what that's going to mean for my relationships. But I just kept going. And I remember there was a guy that I dated, and he was a year ahead of me. And so he got into college and chose not to go because we were dating. And I remember him proposing, and he asked, would you stay in Chicago for me? I'm not going to go to school. When you graduate, we can find jobs and we can just, you know, make a life for ourselves. And I was like, nah, I want to make a path that I've never seen before. And I don't want to work until I have to, which is funny because the school that I went to was a work college and everybody had to work. So like, when you think about
it's
the
a different kind of work.
It's a different kind of work. It was 10 hours a week. But for me, I don't know. It was interesting because I was just like one step at a time. I just need to focus. I need to figure out what I want to do and just get there. And I didn't feel like anybody discouraged me from that. I mean, my youth pastor used to call us the talented 10th. We were the 10% of the population that were going to achieve something. Mm. And he was like, I'm going to make sure that whatever you need me to do, I will do it. So if I think about like going to college, like literally my pastor drove me and my mom to college. They took me to Walmart. And we bought things that I needed because I didn't have sheets that belonged to only me because I'm the oldest of 7. I get to the room and I'm like, oh, I don't know what I need. So things like that, I had real support, but my mom didn't know what was going on. Neither did my father, but my pastor did. And he knew exactly what to do. He knew what to be prepared for. He told me to pack in tubs and not boxes. And so I kept that for like my whole life. Every time I moved, I've had tubs.
Makes sense. Little
plastic tubs. So yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. I just kind of kept going back to people and asking them questions about what they did. Mm-hmm. And then I just got there.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you talked about the history major and education together. So I'd be interested to see, you were in education your junior year, and then you started kind of feeling this unsettle. I know that feeling very well. I am kind of feeling it even now a little bit, and it's interesting to think about that. But for students who are currently experiencing that, let's say they are a junior or they are even a senior and they're in a major mm-hmm. and they've gone so far already and this is who they wanted to be. They feel like their identity is part of this major. And now all of a sudden they're feeling this unrest. What would you say to a student who's feeling that?
Okay, so there's two ways that I looked at it. When do I want to graduate? And will I go back to school?
Ooh, those are two really good questions.
I remember thinking about it. I was like, okay, how many semesters do I have left here? What can I do with those semesters?
So really what's possible?
What's possible?
To hit that goal.
If I want to, and I took summer classes, twice. I took my first online class, but it was like, I am on a mission. I am leaving here in 4 years. And I remember thinking about that because college for me was a 4-year endeavor. It was not a 6-year or 5.5 or, you know, to me, it was like, you got to start and finish in 4 years. How can I do that? And we had paper plans. Like there was an advising space. I don't even remember if it was an office, but every place had, here are the plans for this major. So you can go back through. Now they have an electronic version of that and you can do a what if, and then it'll take all the classes that you took and then tell you what you can do. Yeah. I had a paper.
I kind of like paper anyways better, but maybe that's.
Like I remember because I had like 6 of them and I sat there and I was like, okay, highlight all the classes that I've taken.
Right.
What other classes do I have left? Okay. What do I want to do that I can feasibly do in the next couple of years? And with the summers, how many of those classes will be offered?
Right.
It was a smaller college, so all of those things. Like we had our college catalog said when the classes were offered, how often, when, all that good stuff. So like every 3 years in the spring. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gave me like a sit down, come to Jesus moment, for lack of a better term, about what do I want to do? And then it was like, okay, let's just say I never want to do history again in my life. Will I go back to school? And what do I want to do then? And I didn't have the foresight at that moment. I just thought, I know I'm going to go back to school. And I'll get to do something that I want to do. And I just sucked it up. And I don't believe in transferring. That was one of the other things. Transferring to another school was a foreign thought. Like, oh, so if I transfer, that'll cause more stress. I'll lose classes. And maybe it won't be as, like, I'll have to go through a transition point again. And it was hard enough for me to transition from Chicago to this little small town. Forget it. I'm stuck. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to suck it up. And, you know, it's interesting because with my seminary experience, when I chose to leave that, because seminary is for pastors. You pretty much go to school and you learn the Bible backwards and forwards. You learn different languages that it's written in. And then you learn how to create ministry. And I think my master's at that point would have been in nonprofit administration and a master's of divinity. And I knew exactly what I would end up doing. I remember thinking about it again, like, do I want to be a pastor for the rest of my life? How's that going to look? How many people am I going to have to fight with because I'm a Black woman? I just want to know. Like, and I really thought about that. And I remember making the decision to leave Chicago knowing that I didn't want to fight over my future. Like, there's some things that I'm willing to fight for. Like, I'm willing to fight for this doctorate. I was not willing to fight people about religion. It's like, I'll do it. Like, I can always come back and I can always learn that on my own. But your question was very specific. It was like, what do I tell students? What's your end goal? Do you really want to finish the degree? Are you going to go back to school? And how long are you willing to invest your time in something that you don't like?
Ooh, yeah.
I liked history. I didn't lose my love of history until I realized I didn't want to teach it.
But you were still interested in the subject but enough I still to learn yeah. about it.
Like, I was like, am I still interested in this? And I was interested in it enough to continue. Like, even my senior seminar, I loved it. I got a grant. That was my first experience with grant writing. I got a grant to go to Princeton University for the summer. I was there for like a month. And I wrote about gentrification. I did something I wanted to do. And so I just made it about, like, what do I like? And if I'm not going to be teaching this, how am I going to do that? That's also my first experience with research. And I never caught that until later in life. if you look at my educational experience, I've done research at every point in my career, and I never realized it.
Maybe we could do a whole nother podcast on maybe our research interests and how it might benefit students. Ooh. Because I think whenever I was in undergrad, I did not have a touch with research at all. And I remember thinking it was super boring and I just never enjoyed it. When I look back at it now, I think, oh, anytime I did a research paper, it was to research what's been done and then just to rewrite it in a way that says, here's what's been done. It wasn't to collect data or to answer a question that I actually had. Ooh. It was always doing something for somebody else instead of doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah. You know? And I think history, the benefit of history is that you learn that the perspective of the people that you are reading is just that. It's a perspective. You could have something different. You could research and find a different perspective. It's a perspective. And so it changed research for me. Instead of being a history teacher and reciting history to people, history became, okay, now I'm going to research all of this stuff and I'm going to learn about Soviet Union and all of these things. And I'm just going to keep picking at it until I find what I want to know. To this day, I really think it's interesting because that part of my life, when you really think about it, is completely different than the fun things I did in school.
Yeah, so let's talk about that.
The fun.
So I think a lot of times, I don't know if this has been your experience, but since I moved into higher education and I started working in higher education, I had no idea about all the opportunities and the incredible things that were offered on campus. And even if I did know a little bit about it, I was too afraid to go for things because I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to be uncomfortable. I was super scared to be any kind of leader on campus. And so I would be curious to know, what's one thing maybe that you really did that has impacted you and it still impacts you today? We'll go there first.
Okay, so I had a very different experience, primarily because my high school had so many clubs and organizations, and I felt like it was a different school. I got into this school that I was excited about. It was an hour and 15 minutes away from me. I was in a lot of clubs and organizations. Before I graduated, I was the president of 3 or 4 of them.
You would.
Like, I was I learned the system. So then when I got to college, I was like looking for it.
Okay.
Like, what do you do here?
Yeah.
It was a small school. So what do you do here became very small and very like, if I want to create something, I can do it. So I was like president of the dorm. I was doing all types of stuff. I created a choir.
You still got to do something that you cared about and that you're passionate about, even though you didn't want to do it as like a full-time singer. But you could still develop that skill and just have fun with it.
Oh, man. I enjoyed college. There were some moments that I was like, I don't enjoy this because I don't feel a strong enough community of people. But I was always singing. I was always doing something with ministry. I advocated for them to hire a chaplain. I became their assistant. I was just doing a lot. I was a cheerleader in college. I did all the stuff that I didn't know if I wanted to do it in high school. So like in high school, I marched in the marching band and I was like, I think I want to be a cheerleader. And then I was like, no, I don't. And then in college, I was like, I'm going to be a cheerleader. Then I did it for like 4-5 semesters. I think the most memorable thing I did was become the homecoming coordinator. We had this position for a student to be the primary point person for homecoming. And they work with another person that was an adult, but they were the end all be all. So you would make these decisions with a group and you would get to learn these leadership skills. And then you would be mentored by the adult that had been there. And I got to plan homecoming twice. And I was like, okay, I don't want to be a history teacher. I don't know if I can work at a college, but I like this. And I liked event planning from that moment on. Because not only, so homecoming, if you really think about it, it's for the current students, it's for alumni that have graduated, but then it's also for people who are donating to the school. So you got these three different populations and you're creating programming for all these populations. And if you throw the parents in there, depending on what type of school you go to, you've got 4 populations. So it turns into this like multifaceted, like you're doing all of this stuff to make people feel comfortable. And I was like, I want to do this at a bigger school. And it changed my perception of working at a college is just to make sure the students get through. I kept thinking all these people that work here are just here for me. And it turned into, oh, the people who work here create the environment for me to thrive. I wonder if I can make a career out of that. Because we didn't have a higher ed major. Like, that didn't exist.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how they became. Majority of the people that worked at a college just went to college and then they stayed there for a couple of extra years. If you connect that to, like, my professional life, I knew that I needed time between graduating and developing as a person to go back and work at a college where people, because I looked very young, and I didn't think that the students would respect me enough. Like, I was like, I look too young. They're going to think I'm the same as them. And so I was like, I need some space between being there as a student and actually working there. It was very interesting, but I remember homecoming a lot. I remember the first time I did it, and then I remember the second time doing homecoming and changing the communication scheme. So that meant everything that got sent out looked different. All brochures, all flyers, all emails at that time. The schedule got changed. Like, everything that I could change, I changed. They were like, but the paper that we have, it prints in a certain way. I was like, we don't need that paper. Let's do something else. Like, and they let me. And I remember thinking, I want to do this.
Yeah, and I feel like you probably developed a lot of skills by doing that too. So it's outside of your degree, but it's part of your degree too.
Yeah. I mean, the college was a work college and therefore you worked in, so majority of the school was ran by students, if you really think about it. So cleaning, food service prep, admissions, the bookstore, alumni relations, answered phones. Like, we actually had a switchboard at that time. So when people called in the 800 number, they got a switchboard. So, like, everything that you could think of, even the hall directors, they had three students that were juniors and seniors that were hall directors, and then three other adults that had already graduated. I just had this really interesting experience seeing students work and create this environment for ourselves. And I was like, I want to do this. I think this is a job. I don't know if it's a job, but it sounds like it could be a job someplace else. Yeah.
Well, what's one thing that you would say was really challenging that you experienced when you were in undergrad?
I lost my motivation for reading and writing. And it took a while to get it back. Most students would say they don't read books. They just wait for the professor to talk about what they're going to talk about in class. And so the first year and a half, I didn't read books. I just went to class. They taught me things. I got tested on it. I knew what I could know. And so I wasn't motivated to read anything at all. And it took me a long time to write. I would get writer's block all the time because I felt like had I read, I would know what I should write. Well, I didn't read, so then I know what to write. And history is primarily a writing major. We didn't have any tests. So I got to the point in my third year where I had six history classes that year. Like, it was three one semester and three the next. And I remember finally reading, like, the Strawberry Letters and Malcolm X and something else. And I was like, these stories are real. And I need to sit back and recognize. I think we even read a book by Langston Hughes. And I remember thinking, his writing lives forever. So I need to respect them enough that I take the time to read. And if I read, then it'll be easier for me to write. And it took a little while to get there, but I remember thinking about the transition for me. And it happened in graduate school also. The first class that I took, the Cultural Foundations of Counseling, it was supposed to be an online class. It ended up switching to be a blended class. Pretty much, I think we met four times a semester. So I read the entire book by myself, out loud. And I was hooked. And so I associate the feeling of knowing and being and understanding something that I didn't know before with why I was motivated to read. Because I kept saying, okay, so after I finish this, I'm going to feel this way. So I shouldn't be like, I don't want to read that because it's too much. and it's overwhelming, or that book looks too big, and why should I read that? They're just going to tell me what I need to know. Like, so I would always have to, like, trick myself into, like, well, after I finish reading, they may not even have to tell me, or I can be able to engage with them and be like, this is what I learned. So it's very interesting, but I remember that. I remember the unmotivating part.
What would you tell students who are unmotivated currently, whether reading, writing, or anything else?
Figure out your end goal. Figure out what's important to you. And think that everybody has to do it in some way. If you use the example of writing, Kevin Hart says in his book, I read his book, it was really good.
What's the name of it? Do you remember? I Can't Make This Up. Or no, is that
yeah.
Netflix special?
No, okay. I think that's his book. I Can't Make This Up. Stories, okay. Life Lessons from Kevin Hart.
Okay.
So one of the things that I recognized that he learned as he was creating himself as a comic is that he had to stop what he was doing. He had to stop watching people, and he had to figure out how they were creating a routine. And to create a comedy routine, you have to record yourself, you go back, listen to yourself, and then you go, and sometimes it looked like he had to write out what he said and how he could expand upon that. So there's writing in everything. Even when we just saw Black Panther this weekend, all I can think about is the director and the writers are amazing. They wrote a story that I could see and hear and empathize and with and feel.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want my writing to be like that.
Mm.
So like I had to take myself out of the place of like, I don't need this. Because I think when I was younger, people would just say, you don't need calculus or you don't need X, Y, and Z. And now when I look back on that, the honest truth is you need everything.
Anything, especially if you have access to knowledge,
you need it. Yeah. You need all
you
of
need it.
It.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't take chemistry because I was afraid that I was going to fail. I regret that to this day. There are some things that I probably would know better and know how to use better and know how to, like, you know, incorporate into my life had I took those opportunities. And I would tell people to not fear failure. And not fear, like, learning about new things. Because oftentimes you're like, well, I'm not going to do well at it. Well, you don't know. And you don't really know in the future. I think one of the statements, I used to have it on my wall, it's like, always be prepared. You don't know what you're going to encounter. So always be prepared for it. Like, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know in the future if I'm really going to be, like, a president of a university. Or, like, if I'm going to be a faculty member. Either way, I need to be prepared. And to be prepared, you got to learn everything. And you can't just learn half-hearted things. Like, even musicians have to write. They got to, like, sing. But they got to go back and be like, did that song make sense? Did I, like, rhyme the way I was supposed to? Did I write the right word? Is there a more effective word that I could have placed in this song that would explain my feelings so that someone else could hear this and be like, wow, I feel the same way? So, I don't know. I feel like there's no shortcuts in life.
I just was reading something on Instagram or something, and it was saying how things take time. And I feel like that's something that I personally struggle with, but also that I see a lot of the students that I work with struggle with. And I don't know if you have seen that in the past too, but I feel like students want things now. They want to know the answer now. And, or they're like, okay, I just want to get my degree and get a job. It's not all it's cracked up to be. I'm just kidding. I actually enjoy my job currently.
But, I mean, if you really think about that, like, you have this idea that if I could just speed through this process, everything would be better. Well,
yeah.
Technically, if you really think about the idea of working, you work for about 40 to 50 years of your life. That's something you will do, regardless of if you like it or not. You will work. You will be doing something. And so the school part is for you to explore what you could do. Some people have one career for their entire life, and it could get boring. We know in history that over time, people did only have one career, and they only developed certain types of skills, which kept them in that one career. Whereas if you actually learned all the different things that you want to learn, you could have like 6 or 7. In my lifetime, I've been a conference director for a large 3,000 person conference. I've been an instructor. I've been a financial aid coach. I, like, what? Like, I've done admissions, I've done alumni, I've done fundraising, all because I was like, I'm just open to learning what I need to know. All those experiences are different, but they also are like, okay, I did it. I mean, even being a counselor for a while, I did that. I don't want to do this. But I still took away skills that are like empathetic to other people, how you work with folks, how you talk to people differently, how you are a listener, like how to listen differently. I wouldn't have learned those skills had I not done some of these things. And you need to be a good listener to be a president. You need to be a good listener to become a faculty member, because you got to listen to your students so that you're not just teaching them things. But if they don't understand something and they ask you a question, you should be able to listen enough to know what they need. Every skill that you develop, you will use. Now, I don't know about calculus yet.
I didn't take calculus. I avoided it.
I don't know about calculus yet, but majority of the skills, I mean, even poetry. I think about that. So I think about poetry and music and how the music that I like resembles certain types of poetry. Mm. Or when I feel a certain way in a relationship, I like go back to a poem that I like, and then I send it to that person. I'm like, hey, this is what I was thinking of. And this person already wrote it. So take what they wrote and connect that with my feelings. It's complex. Take your time. What are you in a hurry to do? I mean, are you really in a hurry to go to work? Because I'm not.
I mean, I even think about as a PhD student, I'm trying to see what else can I use for free since I'm a student before I leave this college, you know, mm-hmm. and go out. I mean, I've been in the real world before, and even thinking about the career coach, it costs hundreds of dollars outside of the university, but here you get it for free. It's part of your, well, you're kind of paying for it through tuition, so how can you use that? How can you use counseling, tutoring to maximize what you're learning mm-hmm. and what skills you want to develop? So that way, when you do graduate, you are already ahead of the game.
College just has so many opportunities. And I think fear is the number one component for students not doing what they think they should do.
Why do you think that is? What's holding them back?
I haven't done a lot of research on transition anxiety or fear yet, but fear, for my youth pastors, they would say false evidence appearing real. And they would talk about how you believe something is going to happen at the end, or you believe that some process is going to go unjustly, and it captures you. And it's like, I don't want to do that. You know, Chris Rock said in his recent stand-up that everybody can't do everything. He was like, in a high school orientation, these teachers were lying to their students.
About bullying?
Yeah, he was like, there should be bullies, and everybody can't do everything. And you know, I'm a firm believer in that, but I'm also a firm believer in you can pretty much do whatever you put your mind to. There are a lot of Hollywood stars and writers and presidents of colleges and CEOs of businesses that, you know, honestly, they could have just been at home, like chilling with their mama and not doing anything with their life. But they like woke up one day and was like, I got a vision and I want to do this. And they probably weren't going to do it. I mean, Kevin Hart was selling gym shoes in a store. You know what I mean? Like, you could settle and be pretty mediocre. Or you could get a vision for your life and be like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do something new. And you could pretty much do anything. And I'm a believer in that. I don't know what my life is going to look like. I don't know how. I was asking, I talked to somebody at a major conference, and they were like, what area do you want to work at in a college? And I said, none that exists right now. And that was really confusing for that person. She was like, what do you mean? Like, if it doesn't exist right now, you can't work there. And I'm like, yeah, I can. I can create it. That's what you got to think of. If it doesn't exist, you can always create it. Or if you don't, and if you want to create something, you have to know all the intricate details of it, which is why you got to learn everything you need to learn. Because all of that stuff, you connect. I mean, the little about chemistry I understand, I wish I would have learned so that I could learn how to make org charts better. Everything that you learn is for a purpose.
And sometimes you can't make that connection until later on in life, too.
Yep.
Yeah. So just for time's sake, well, actually, I want to ask you one more question about this, and then we'll do the last question. So you talked about fear. Do you have any suggestions about how a student maybe could get over fear, or maybe one thing that you did that you felt was really uncomfortable but really helped you step outside of your comfort zone and you learned a lot from it?
My youth pastors used to tell us that your mind is the control over everything. So what you think you are, what you hear, you will take in and you will become or you will act like. Now, you know, a part of me believes that you can control your actions and what you do and what you say because of what you hear or what goes into your mind. So what music you listen to, things like that. A part of me thinks you can control those things. And then sometimes subliminally, I don't think you can. I think you hear something and you start to become it. So for me, I changed the music that I listened to, and I didn't change it to all religious music like most people do, or at least a lot of my friends did. I changed it to music that was positive, that talked about dreams and goals. And I changed what I heard, and then I changed the self-talk that was in my head, because it took a little while for me to decide if I really want to move forward as a person. And I celebrated, and I think that's another thing. So I changed what I thought, and then I celebrate milestones, as little as they are. I celebrated getting in my first apartment because I could take care of myself. I celebrated making grocery lists because I knew what I could eat and I knew how to prepare food. I celebrated every time I read a book. I wrote a list of the books that I read for a year and encouraged myself. See, reading isn't that hard. So everything for me was about how I think. And I would actually start to be if I'm starting to fear something, I would have conversations with other people. I did go to counseling for a little while, because when you're in counseling, you have to go to counseling. But I always processed my fears, and I debated about if they were real. Mm. And that's, that takes some honesty. Sometimes you're just not honest with yourself.
It's hard to be real and vulnerable with yourself and then also with other people.
Yeah, because with yourself, that would imply that you're actually acknowledging the fear. So acknowledge it. Be honest and be you know what? I really do fear heights. I really, for a long time, feared heights and large buildings. So by myself, I went to the Sears Tower.
That's the tall one with the glass.
Tall one with the glass.
Okay. Yeah. So if you don't know what this is, look it up on Google. But
it's called the Willis Tower now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. But you walk over, right? Yeah. So describe it really quick.
So you go up to the top, and there's a...
And it's super high up.
Super high up, 119 floors. You can either look out into the skyline of Chicago, or you can walk, or you can lay on a glass that you are suspended upon all of the things. So the reason why I did these, because I would have dreams about me falling out of planes, so then I'd be afraid to go on planes. And I had to stop myself and be if I don't go on planes, then I can't travel. And if I can't travel, I can't go around the world. And I want to see the world. Again, those little stepping stones. I just started doing things. And
small little steps that would help you get to what you wanted.
Yeah. I mean, when I traveled for the first time by myself, I went to London and Paris, and I went to the Eiffel Tower. And I sat there. I remember sitting on a bench looking at the Eiffel Tower for an hour because I was too afraid to go up in it. I was I'm not doing this. And then I was if I leave here, if I go all the way to Paris and I just took pictures of the Eiffel Tower, nobody's going to ever forgive me. They're going to be how dare you?
And you're going to be pissed off at yourself, right? Because you wanted to go up.
I should have went up. So I sat there for an hour debating about if I was really scared of heights. And then I remember thinking, all these people are not scared. Why am I? So I got in line. I put on headphones to listen to some music that would calm me down. Mm-hmm. And then somebody tapped my shoulder and asked a question. And from that point on, I took off my headphones. And for the next 2 hours, I just talked to people about their experience and how they got to Paris. As we walked upstairs, as we got on the elevator, yeah, as we went up and looked over, and it changed, everything was okay, this is just a step. Because I remember thinking, oh my God, okay, I'm going to get in line, I'm going to put on my headphones, and I'm going to calm down. And when that person tapped me, scared the crap out of me, I was like, what is going on? And they were you dropped something. And you dropped something turned into oh, well, my group here is from Australia and we met. So I'm from London and my friend is from Australia and we met here so we could see the Eiffel Tower for the weekend and hang out. And then that group then started talking to the next group, and the next group was a boys group from Abu Dhabi, and they had came to celebrate one of his friends getting married, and they wanted to do some things as a part of their bachelorette party. Or their bachelor party to like say, I did this before I got married. And then the next, like every group had a story. And I was like, wow, I'm going to the Eiffel Tower with these people I don't know. I got pictures of these folks. I don't even remember their names. But yeah, that's how I got over it. I just had to like really talk myself out of it. And then I also.
Or into it.
And I don't know. I feel like sometimes we let our fear get the best of us and we don't acknowledge the fear. And so then we start acting in fear. And then we don't know why we're acting that way because we didn't acknowledge the fear in the first place. It's almost like you got to like stop and like calm yourself down and think.
And you sometimes, if we're not taught to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to learn how to do that on our own or with other people.
Very true.
And so if you don't know how to do that and you're listening to this podcast right now, maybe think about a way that you can. And I'll also, I think reading helps so much. So I read a lot of self-help books. And every time I read one, I learn more. And I'm like, how did I not know this before? Or why haven't I used this actually in my life? You know, and I'm really trying to challenge myself to learn and grow constantly. But you just don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know.
And be open, right? To learning.
I mean, it's interesting to think about like reflection, because the skills of reflection are things that you learn, or at least for me, I didn't learn that in school. I didn't learn reflection. Reflection is what I learned in church. I learned that, like, I always questioned why people were overly emotional in church. And at that point in life, they did testimony services. And so you would hear the background of people's stories and how they reflected on the goodness of their relationship with their creator. And I would be like, how did you get to that point? So now I start asking people questions like, how did you recognize that something was changing for you? And they say, oh, in the morning, I sit and I like read my Bible and I reflect and I journal. And I was like, oh, okay. I need to do that then.
And again, I think just being open to trying that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, okay, I mean, because what can it hurt? It just takes time.
Like,
and then.
Because you don't have to read the Bible to reflect.
Right, right.
You could just reflect and think about your day. I mean, my dad still does that to this day. He sits down every day and he writes down, these are the three things I did today. And if he doesn't have anything else, I cheated. I read his journal.
Does he know that? Is he going to listen to this?
I don't know. But I remember I was at his house and I thought, like, he has a journal. He has lots of journals. And I, like, flipped through them. And literally, some days he would write, I did this today, I did this today, I did this today. That's it. And other days he would reflect about the people he met and he would tell a story. And the rest of the days, I mean, sometimes he would just stop and acknowledge that the day happened and he would write the date and that was it.
I've read somewhere that they said that if you journal for a few weeks, you can actually start seeing patterns in the way that you think and interact. I haven't journaled enough, long enough to, in a committed way, I guess, to really notice that. And I read that recently and I was like, dang, maybe I should start thinking about doing that and how like my habits have or need to change.
Oh, yeah.
But
well, yeah, it's good. Because and then the other thing that I learned about reflecting is I learned it from a supervisor. She drove for like 3 hours a day. Like she would drive from different sites and she wouldn't listen to music. And so music is like crazy important to me. But I remember getting in her car and she had really good questions. Like not like, hey, how you doing? And we're like open-ended, thoughtful, genuine
that
questions.
That makes you think.
And I was like, where did you get these questions from? And she said, oh, I don't play music during the day. I play it at night or, you know, when I'm not driving. When I'm driving, I'm fully focused and I'm reflecting on the day and thinking about what do I have to do next. And I was like, really? So there's some tools to figure out how to reflect even if you don't like writing. Because I was like, oh, so you're reflecting in silence and so nothing's interrupting your mind. Nothing, like, except your thoughts. So yeah. You got to figure out, you know, what's important.
What works best for you.
What worked best for you.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful for students to know, too, that just because something isn't working for you doesn't mean that you don't need that thing. So maybe reflection, you don't think reflection works for you, but maybe the way that you're doing it isn't the best way, right?
Or whatever. You got to figure something out.
Now we'll try to wrap up. I've been trying to do that for like 15 minutes. I'm just kidding. It's a great conversation. So, okay. So what is one or two pieces of advice or things that you wish that you would have known about when you were in college or tips that you would give students who are currently in college?
I wish I would have thought more about not necessarily what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, but I wish I would have thought more about how I was going to motivate myself to make it through those 4 years. For me, personally, I recognize that I lose a lot of time focusing on the things that I don't want to do. And so I didn't focus a lot on what I wanted to do. Like, I got involved, but I was in a mindset of like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And so then it took me a while to uncommit myself from things, if that's a word. So. Yeah.
To say no.
There's a point to which I should have been reflecting about my life more. And I just did not. I think that would have helped me navigate the college experience better. Because I wasn't afraid to ask for help. Because I think that's something that people like really struggle with. But I feel like historically I've learned, as funny as it sounds. So in African nations, wisdom is multi-generational. So everything that you do will depend on the people that's coming before you, the people that's coming after you, and the people that are like right next to you. That's also a biblical concept. Like you should have somebody that you're mentoring, somebody's mentoring you, and then somebody's on the same playing field. And so I'm never like thinking about, oh, well, I don't want to help anybody or I don't want people to help me. Because I always had this vision of like, this is what community looks like. You do not make decisions by yourself. You make decisions in community and you think about the results that it's going to have on the people after you. And you think about if someone else did it before you and how it turned out for them. So I always kind of had that concept, but I just never took the real time to reflect about my life. And I think maybe that principle, like you should always be thinking about who's coming after you. You should always be thinking about who's next to you and how can you encourage them along the way. And honestly, it's even better for you to have somebody that finished college, if you can find them. It was hard for me to find people, and so the Alumni Development Department actually connected me with some people, and they gave me like, well, this is what happens after college. You're going to have a moment where you may not have a place to live. How do you navigate that? And so to have that type of thought process, amazing, because it humbles you to think that somebody may make the same mistakes as you, and you're trying to help them not do it. So that almost makes you reflect then like, okay, so the people that we're doing these things with, is this the best that we could do for both of us? So I always had somebody that was like alongside of me, but the people that were like done with college, they'd be like, none of that's going to matter. You should think about, don't even do X, Y, and Z. Do these things because they're going to be more beneficial to you. So I don't know. That was really, really helpful for me. It was more helpful because I was always accountable to somebody. And I didn't feel like I was doing it alone. And maybe that's another thing.
Yeah, it sounds like there's three things in here. It's reflection and community and prioritizing.
Oh, yeah.
So reflection, community, and prioritizing were really key because the community helped you prioritize and help you reflect on what are your priorities and that's like something that you wish you would have done more even is the prioritizing and things like that.
Yeah, and I assumed that college was a place to get a job for the first couple of years.
Right? I mean, I feel like that's why people go to college is to get a job and that's important. We need you to get a job after.
Yes, that's true.
But ideally, if we can get you into something that you love and can make an impact and do well financially and have like a greater purpose.
I mean, so here's the fun part. Direction for your life. So college in literature, there's some literature that I read, as crazy as it sounds, that talks about the purpose of college is to explore who you are, not to get a job.
But that's not the way it's marketed currently.
No, that's not, but that wasn't the way it was marketed to me. And had I took time to, like, it took a couple of years for me to get to the point, like, oh, I'm exploring this experience. And this experience is preparing me for something else. Had I explored it in that way, I wouldn't have taken the classes that I was taking. I wouldn't have gone into the field that I was going into. Maybe, you know, history was the bomb for me. And it still is. Because it helps me to, like, understand concepts and timelines and all that good stuff. But if you really think about the logic of that, you are exploring who you are. So to end on, like, a funny story. So my dad used to say, when we finally started having, like, a stronger relationship, it was in college. And he would say, college is to find yourself. And I was like, I'm not lost. Like, what do you mean? I need to find myself. And I kid you not, it took me a couple of years to realize that it wasn't that I was lost. It was that I didn't know me. So I had to figure out who I was to figure out how I was going to navigate the rest of my life. And I believe that college is an opportunity for you to figure out who you are, what you value, what you want to do, how you're going to be an asset to your community, and then you can move forward. When you don't take the time to figure out, like, who you are, you do things for the wrong motivations. You start doing things because of money. And realistically, no superstar millionaire will tell you that money made them happy. It is because they knew who they wanted to be and what impact they wanted to have on the world. So take the time to, like, figure out who you are. And then go and do and be.
I think that's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Margaret. You are incredible. And I really appreciate you sharing your story and your wisdom to future generations. Thank you so much for listening to the College Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe. Have an excellent week.